Welcome to episode 12 of the Schaefer Creative Podcast. With me today is animation supervisor Michael Greenhold. I had the pleasure of working with Mike while he was working on a new 2D animated series at Warner Brothers, which is going to be released later this year, and you're going to hear a lot more about that. And Mike is currently working at Disney Toons on a CG series. Schaefer Creative is a product of my family of six, all of us pursuing careers in film or the arts. This is our place to showcase our art, document our growth, and share what we learned. We hope you'll find value in learning from our artistic convictions, our mistakes and successes, and the guidance we share as a family. In the Conversations with Creatives edition, I invite my friends, colleagues, and heroes to talk about their craft, their education, and professional life in their art. I'm animation director Todd Schaefer, the father and your host on this edition of the Schaefer Creative Podcast. Mike is a very studious animation professional. He's a graduate of Ringling School of the Arts and was accepted into one of the few Disney animation boot camps, and he went straight from that program into Disney. In this episode, Mike gives us a colorful snapshot of his journey from Hanover, Pennsylvania to Disney Animation in LA. Mike also talks about his artistic influences and gives advice to students about getting a job in animation. You may have never heard his name, but I think you're going to hear a lot more about Michael Greenhold. Mike and I met at the Marche Wine Bar in Burbank.
I did a podcast with a friend of mine, and we came off way too serious because we were doing this commentary for one of the fairy movies.
Okay.
Because we both worked on it, and
Which, Tinkerbell?
Tinkerbell, okay. The first one. And so we set it up where it's like, okay, you know, if you have the DVD, put it in and hit play now.
We're hitting
play.
And then you guys chat about it.
Talked about, like, who worked on it. But we came off so grave, you know, it's like, in this sequence, you know, I was working with so-and-so, who was a brilliant artist. And we listened to it later. It's like, we were way too serious.
Huh. That's funny. Serious on a commentary.
Yeah, no.
For Tinkerbell.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like,
who are these people making our movies?
Yeah, exactly. It was, it got too important too fast.
So, Mike, give me a little bit about your background, your history, where you came from as a kid, what inspired you, how long you've been doing art.
Okay. I grew up in Pennsylvania.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great. I grew up in Maryland.
Okay. Where in Maryland?
I grew up in Savage, which is between Baltimore and Washington.
Okay.
And you grew up in
Hanover.
Okay. You're so very just close away.
Yeah, practically
just
Maryland.
2 hours away.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just a step away from.
Yeah. That. So we always went to the Orioles game because we were closer to Baltimore than we were Philadelphia or Pittsburgh. Yeah.
So you're an Appalachian like me.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But north of the Mason-Dixon line.
Yes. Of course.
Yeah. But just barely. So I grew up in the woods there, and my father is a blacktop contractor. My mother is an accountant for the same blacktop company, and so I just got into drawing because I liked cartoons. You know, I'd watch them on TV and then just draw them, and grew up doing that. And then Disney was a big influence, and when I was a kid, my grandparents had a motorhome. And so every other year, they would drive us down to Disney World. And so and because we were a blacktop family, we worked in the summer, but we didn't in the winter. So I got to get out of school to drive down from the cold to the warm weather to go to Disney World. So, and we alternated with my cousins. So every other year we went, and it seemed like an eternity. So like Disney World was like my oasis in, like, I hated school. I hated everything about school. And so I could look forward to that. There was, around fifth grade, you could take these educational tours. And I liked to draw. And so there was a tour that you could do, an art tour. And so they took you around the parks, showed you behind the scenes. But then you met with a Disney artist who would show you how to draw Mickey Mouse.
Really?
Yeah, and so that was fun. So I came back from that sort of energized and was just drawing Disney characters all the time, but learning to draw better.
So you were indoctrinated at a young age.
Yes, very young age. All based purely on escapism. And
I think all of us were like that.
Yeah, and so I rode that wave for a while, and then when I was 14, Little Mermaid came out.
Wow.
If you do the math, you can figure out how old I am now. But I was, well, back up a little bit. Before that, Roger Rabbit came out, which just, I was like almost in middle school, and it just blew my mind.
Yeah.
And that got me excited about more 2D old school. I mean, at the time, 2D was the only animation, right. But just that old school, like Looney Tunes, right. Rubber Hose, you know, type stuff.
Because even back then, it wasn't done as much. He had all the TV animation. Yeah. It was very limited.
Yeah, and animated movies were kind of in a slump.
Yeah.
You know, I think Great Mouse Detective had come out prior to that, which was kind of cool, but didn't get a lot of play.
Right.
And so, yeah, so Roger Rabbit got me just more excited about animation, and just the technology there, just, it was everything my nerdy little brain needed at the time. And so, if nothing else, it gave me more drawing practice.
Yeah.
And I think, too, having that movie and seeing the cartoon characters shaded made me think more about lighting. And so I was taking, like, you know, any cartoon character that I would draw, Bugs Bunny, Garfield, whoever, and be like, well, what happens if I shade it? Can I shade it? And so that started getting me more into, like, still life and more than just copying cartoon characters.
Yeah, cool.
And then Little Mermaid came about when I was 14, and so I was just at the right age that caught my attention, because it was this pretty redhead, you know, who was 16 and I was 14. But that was just seeing that, and she was a cartoon character but seemed so alive, and it's like, I think I want to be an animator. And so that kind of drove me from then on out. And I think it was in eighth grade, in English class, we had to write a business letter. And so I'm like, I'm going to write to Disney and ask them what I have to do to become an animator. And so, you know, I wrote my letter properly formatted in business format and sent it. And I got a reply. And apparently lots of kids my age would send those letters, because I got, it was a form letter, but it was very thorough and detailed and spelled out, this is what we're looking for, these are the types of courses, here's some schools we recommend, and even a brochure on, like, how to get into Disney animation. And so, again, that just kept pushing me forward. So from there, like, there were a couple art schools. CalArts was one, but being in Pennsylvania, my parents were like, that's too far away.
Yeah.
They didn't want me to go to New York City because they were afraid of the big city.
Yeah.
But then there was Ringling in Florida.
Oh, so you went to Ringling.
Yeah. And having traveled, you know, all those winters down to Florida, that was like my place.
Wow,
like,
you cool.
know. You know, so that was top of my list. And so I applied to there and got in.
Cool. Because I remember when I was looking for schools back then, I was, Ringling was one of the ones that stood out to me.
And it's funny because, I mean, that was, and by the time, like, between The Little Mermaid and by the time I graduated in 94 was when the second renaissance was happening at Disney. So, again, that just fueled my, you know, my interest in it, because they were getting more successful, they were doing more, and they were doing better things. And they opened the studio in Florida, and so...
That's right.
You know, it seemed like everything was coming together. And when I started, they had just started their CG animation program.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which I had no interest in.
Yeah.
Because at the time, the only CG animation you saw were, like, Listerine bottles. You know, and
silver balls.
Yeah, and silver balls. And I, you know, was really interested in, you know, character animation, emotion, acting, you know, all those sorts of things. And so, and even too, for 2D animation, they recommended studying illustration. And basically they said, learn to draw and we'll teach you to animate.
Right.
And so that's what I did. And so it was weird because coming from small town Pennsylvania, you know, I was the best, or thought I was the best, quote unquote, artist in the school. You know, no one else drew. Some people drew and they may have drawn better than I did, but they kept to themselves more. But then you get to art school freshman year, everybody there wants to be a Disney animator,
right.
You know, and so it's kind of a wake-up call, and, like, some of them are really good,
yeah.
You know, and, like, huh, I'm going to blend in here.
There's competition.
Yeah, and lots of it. But as I was there, I got more interested in illustration because it was... The storytelling was fun, but I also liked painting, and I liked lighting and setting up the scene and the mood, and not just doing the character, but the whole,
right.
The whole scene.
Yeah.
And so, I was focusing more on that, and I was focusing more on drawing and painting. And then, my junior year, Disney started a new program, and it's called Animation Boot Camp. And it was designed for college juniors to go and do this 1 month-long intensive summer workshop. And then from that, they would know what to focus on their senior year. And part of the deal was that they were going to select 36 for the whole program, and two people they would hire, offer contracts to come work for Disney after graduation. And, you know, so I'm like, okay, I'll submit my stuff because they're coming here. And you know, and I was still kind of interested in animation. And so I got into the program. And that was a blast because it was just, I mean, we worked from like 7 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. And we did every aspect. We did Viz Dev, we did storyboards, we had, like, you know, a storyboard story to panel, and we had like 2 days to do it, and we did animation, we did effects, we did backgrounds, we also had lectures, we also went on field trips where we would go draw animals, you know, or go, you know, to a mission. This was in, they had this in Monterey, California, so we'd go to a mission and draw to study layout, and it was great.
Monterey, California.
Yeah.
Not in Florida.
Not in Florida.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why Monterey?
I think it was closer to the California studio.
Yeah.
But
not,
I think,
by much.
But there was...
that's way up the coast.
Yeah, there's a college campus up there, okay. Which was, I think, empty for the summer.
Okay.
So they could put us up in the dorms there. We could use the classrooms there.
Interesting.
And it was beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And isolated.
It's isolated and strikingly,
yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah, and we were on, it was the old Fort Ord base.
Yeah, okay.
Which, it was the middle of summer, Monterey was beautiful, but that one spot was always like cold, windy, and rainy. Like,
really?
Yeah, it was like the Addams Family house. It was just like this one spot, like anytime we'd go into town or on a field trip, it would be beautiful, but just right on this one spot, it was freezing and cold and damp. At the end of the boot camp, you know, you submit all your stuff for final review, and then you go back, you know, to do your senior year, and you wait to find out, you know, who those two students were. And it turns out they picked two. One of them couldn't do it for whatever reason. They couldn't sign a contract, so I got... Like,
oh, okay, so you were like the third
I was like third in line and just got in by the skin of my teeth. And so... that made senior year really easy, because in October of my senior year, I had signed a contract with Disney. As long as I pass above a certain grade average,
wow,
I can come work for them.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it took the pressure off. And then that was the last time they ever did that program.
Man, oh man.
And
I mean, I wonder if they thought it wasn't profitable or it was too costly or... Well, also, I remember at that time, that's when it started going downhill.
Well,
it was a bit
and
of a
also,
turn.
What happened was DreamWorks had opened and had hired a lot of people away from Disney. And so I think there was this contest to try to get talent, you know, and I think DreamWorks is like, we're going to get them as soon as they graduate. Disney was like, well, why don't we try to get them a year before they graduate?
Okay, I see.
Because I came into Disney, I started just a couple weeks finishing up Fantasia 2000, and they were doing the Beauty and the Beast re-release, and they were adding an extra song sequence.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And so I got to do cleanup on that,
oh,
which was fun, because I liked those characters, I liked that movie, so it was fun to...
So you had the golden child ticket from school
it was,
right into Disney.
I think so. The thing is... It was more like, you know those cartoons where the baby is just obliviously walking across the steel girders that are being pulled up, and it's just, I just happened to be at the right spot at the right time, to not fall horribly to my death.
That's a good way to put it.
No, and there's probably a coyote I wasn't aware of trying to kill me that I never saw. But no, everything just worked out, you know, because like even at boot camp, I wasn't the best animator there, and you know,
you were obviously better than most, or you wouldn't have been.
I was good enough, yeah. And I when I did get into Disney, I did ask someone why me, and they said you were nice to work with. They're like, you helped other people, you know, and you didn't take the every man for himself mentality, which some of the students did. But no, I was there, and I was just like, whatever happens is going to happen. Like, I'll do my best, but that's all I can do. And
I think students, one thing they don't always factor in is, and I talk about this with all kinds of artists, not just animators, but my painter friends and whatever, we look at the people and we say, you know, character is so important in an artist. It's not just about the art and the talent and the drive. You got to be able to work with these people, especially in animation, because it's such a collaborative environment. Yeah. And if you're difficult to work with, you could be the superstar. You might need to be fired in order for the production to survive.
No, absolutely. And not only is it about collaboration, it's about compromise. Like, the biggest surprise that most people find coming into animation is you don't get to do what you want to do. You know, it's usually someone else's vision at best, you know, and, you know, but usually it's like a combination of a few people's visions, and it's a compromise, and it's like
that's exactly right.
And if you can't change, you know, if you're not willing to graciously take a note and do it well, like, no one's going to want to work with you.
What I've noticed, we had some kids come out of the CEGEP system in Montreal. And the CEGEP is like a junior college; it's like a trade school. But there's one that has a very good animation program. And the guys who come out who are the best, the guys and girls who are the best, are the most humble people. They're the superstars, but they come in the studio and they are just drinking in everything. They're so thankful. They're doing extra work just to try to help people. Mm-hmm. And then the other ones tend to be those who have more of a chip on their shoulder. They think they've got something to prove. And they're not really there to be a team player. They're there to run the show. They think they're entitled to it. And I always find that fascinating. And in fact, my kids are in Concordia University, the oldest two. One's in the film school, one's in drawing and painting plus animation. And the thing that they teach, and that they've been consistently teaching there for a long time, is they're training the artists and filmmakers to come out to be directors, which is insane to me. Because that's a position of incredible leadership, not something that you can do without experience. You don't just come out and do that.
Right.
You've got to come into the system, learn how the thing goes, and be humble, and earn your way there rather than just thinking title.
Unless you're an amazing director, you know.
And very few are. Maybe Steven is.
But the thing is, even a lot of times those directors haven't done all the jobs to get there.
That's right.
And they can be directors people don't want to work with.
That's exactly right. And they need a lot of help to get to where they are, to get it done. And it's just, when I went to film school, the first thing they said is, you guys want to be directors? No. You're coming out. You figure out what you're going to do. You're going to edit. You're going to be a cameraman. You're going to do sound. You figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just learning to work in a team. You know, because the best directors rely on their...
On their people.
On their people, And I've worked with directors that I love that will say to the art director, you tell me what colors these are supposed to be.
Right.
I'll tell you if it doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
You know, or to the animation supervisor, they'll say, you tell me how the characters move, and I'll tell you if it fits the story or not.
That's right, yeah. So who were some of your biggest influences as a kid?
You know, I grew up with the Saturday morning cartoons. Smurfs was a big thing. And it wasn't until, like, college that I realized that those were based on Belgian comics. Bloom County, the comic strip.
I I live for Broome County.
Yeah, and that appealed to my sense of absurdity. There's a lot of political commentary that I didn't get, but I knew they were poking fun at politics, and so, and just the weirdness of humans and animals kind of living together, you know, it was just weird, and I liked it. I think that helped develop my sense of humor.
Do you follow them now?
No, I don't. I kind of...
You outgrew them.
But like the Looney Tunes cartoons, I grew up on those. That was just like, you know, my dad was really into those. Like my parents weren't artists and they weren't into art, but like there were certain things like movies or cartoons that they enjoyed. So that was something that, you know, we have in common. Muppets was a huge thing.
Yeah, Muppets. That's true. I watched a lot of Muppets.
Yeah, too. And it... It's been astonishing how much watching the Muppets is good animation training.
That's a very good point.
Because, you know, they don't have lip sync, but man, it feels like those words are coming out of their mouths. And they don't blink, their eyes don't move, but they feel alive. And it's like, if you can get that, you know, adding blinks and lip sync is just icing on the cake.
That is a very good point. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, but no, and just shape language and clarity, you know, simplicity. Jim Henson's other stuff, like there was a TV series, the Jim Henson Hour, where he would do kind of like fairy tales and stuff that were kind of darker, you know, and there was just a neat sense of storytelling there. Yeah. And again, absurdity, like they didn't ever take themselves too seriously.
Yeah. So what kind of advice would you give the kids who are in college now or thinking of going to college? What do you do? How do you get there? How do you prepare yourself for this kind of career?
It's interesting, and I have a friend who's a college professor, and he has said recently, it's like college may not be the best route because like it's expensive now.
It's very expensive, you know,
younger people on our team, you know, talk to them about student loans, and it's just, they expect to be saddled with that for the rest of their life.
It's incredible.
You know, and there's so much online, because even now, like, I'm constantly learning, and most of what I learn is on YouTube.
Yeah, I know, it's incredible.
And, like, I studied illustration, I learned 2D animation at Disney, but then CG animation I learned on my own, and to bring up the history, after I did 2D at Disney for 5 years, and then when they pulled the rug out of 2D, then I jumped over to a little boutique studio that was doing CG, and there I learned CG animation by immersion. There were five of us, and they're like, if you have two hands and a brain, you have to like start clicking and helping us, and so I learned it there. But then everything I learned for CG animation, I learned just either on the job or just through YouTube.
Right. There's so much information there. And even, you know, if you look at the art schools and the animation schools, you've got to wonder, okay, are they really giving you anything to prepare you for a job? Because I was recently at the Ottawa Animation Festival, and we had a career day, and buses of students would come up from the States, from art schools and animation schools, and their work was atrocious. And you got to think, you're graduating with this kind of portfolio? I'm sorry, but you wasted 4 years of your life. They did not give you what you needed to do, and it's really sad.
Yeah.
It's almost criminal, I would say, because you're being promised something, and you're not being prepared for the basic entry-level position in a working studio.
Yeah, and with that in mind, I would say a big bit of advice is learn to do the stuff that nobody wants to do.
Oh, good point.
I have a friend who, he does a podcast, he does an animation school. He started as a prop designer, came in painting props because he's like, nobody wants to do this. And that was his foot in the door.
Huh.
You know, then he went from painting props to, you know, painting characters and then designing characters and you know, and then he left and started his own thing. He didn't need the studios anymore.
Wow. What was his name?
Chris Oatley.
Okay, he's got a whole website. He's Mr. Big Time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I worked with him at Disney Toons.
Wow, incredible.
Yeah, and that was his advice, to just like, and I've seen that also just talking to art directors, production designers, it's like everyone comes in and they want to be a superstar.
Yeah.
You know, and they might do a beautiful painting of like what a location or a prop might look like, but it's stylized. Mm-hmm. And someone needs to sit down and do a turnaround of it,
right,
or figure out how it works, and nobody wants to do that.
That's right.
And so if you can do that, like, that's a good foot in the door, you know, for a studio, you know, for getting the studios.
So do you see any kids coming out of schools that are preparing them, that are doing a good job of preparing the students?
You know, I'm not in the recruitment a lot.
Yeah,
but,
no, that's fair enough.
But Ringling has a lot of students that get placed in CG animation. They've been fairly consistent with that, and they have a good program. But again, I didn't do their CG animation program. I did illustration, and
right,
so I mean, it has changed a lot in 20 years. But I think some of the things to avoid is that when I started college, the internet wasn't what it is today.
Yeah.
And I'm glad, because I would have been so discouraged seeing what other people were doing that I may have given it up.
Yeah.
You know, in a small town, I had that foolishness of like, I'm the best artist in the world,
right,
because I'd never seen anyone else's work.
Right. I think a lot of kids are like that growing up.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you should be that way, because of that, I was constantly drawing and painting, which just gave me practice, which is the thing you need the most.
Right.
But now, the internet, I think, does a disservice to people in that you see what's trendy. You know, an artist comes out and does something cool, everybody copies that.
Right.
And so suddenly everyone's portfolio looks the same, and you go, you know, to, you know, portfolio reviews, and it's like, it all looks like it could have been done by the same person.
That's true.
And the thing we look for is the one person that is different.
Wow.
You know, or can do the job that they're applying for.
Right.
You know, if we're looking for a prop designer, and someone has these amazing stylized character designs, it's like, okay, but can they design props? And that leads into portfolio. It's like, something that I didn't learn until later is you don't have to have one portfolio.
That's a good point.
You know, if you want to do animation, make your animation reel. If you can also do character modeling, make a separate character modeling reel and make it, because anytime anyone is hiring, it's because they need work done and they just want to be reassured that the person they're talking to can do what they need them to
right.
do.
That's
you know,
right.
they don't want to, if they need character models done, they don't want to interview someone who wants to direct
right.
real soon.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
If you do, that's fine. Just keep it under your hat. Just tell them, there's nothing I want more than whatever this job is that I'm interviewing for.
Mike and I will continue our conversation in the next episode of the Schaefer Creative Podcast. Looking ahead, my guests will include oil painter from Annapolis, Maryland, John Eversberger, character animator Phil Lockerbie, and legendary Disney animator Michael Suri. Thank you for joining us on this edition of the Schaefer Creative Podcast. You will find show notes for this episode and more information about Schaefer Creative at schaefercreative.studio. Music is by Lee Rosevere.